Hello and welcome back to Scream Addicts. I'm Jason Jenkins. Call me Jinx. Sitting with me here tonight are...
I'm Lars Honeytoast.
What the fuck is with these names?
I am Paul, your favorite.
I don't understand why the names.
I'm Cliff.
Hi, oh, for
Cliff.
Fuck's sake.
My first name is Ryan, though.
Hi, Ryan.
I'm sitting with Brian Prim, Dave Hagen, and Seth
Cliff.
Dixon. Cliff Dixon. All right, I'm calling you Cliff Dixon from
That's
here on
good
out.
Name, Cliff Dixon.
Cliff Dixon
sounds like an insult.
Like it, does it?
Like it's almost a bad word.
You need like a superhero name where, you know, the letters are the same on both your first and last name.
It is. Dick Dude.
Say, Cliffy.
Dick Dixon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like Daredevil.
What would your superhero name be?
Dick Dude.
Moving on. All right.
I have two D's on my chest and my batons are shaped like dicks.
Of course they
still
are.
Still have devil horns though.
Now, guys, much as we've done for the last several weeks, we have just watched the movie in the Mailroom Studios Screaming Room, and this week...
He's got it.
And it wasn't Ghost Dad.
And it will never be fucking Ghost Dad.
It's not going to be
Ghost Dad.
Any fool can be a ghost father. It takes a real man to be a ghost dad.
Brian is reading fucking Amazon reviews of Ghost Dad. Guys, we're not doing Ghost Dad. I'm putting my foot down.
The Ghost Dad is funniest Cosby films in my opine. Anytime I see these films, I laugh and laugh heartily. Five stars.
There might be a little bit of truth somewhere in there.
I like that you tell us the rating afterwards, because there's some surprise. Is this a three-star? It's like a three-star. Oh, it's five.
I can't stress enough that both feet are down on this. We're never fucking doing Ghost Dad. We did an episode on Victor Salva. We can't do an episode on fucking Bill Cosby. We can't.
Absolutely we can.
We can't.
A lot to talk about. I don't want to talk about that part of his life.
We can't. All right.
And that corporate issue.
The corporate issue and
the
Ghost Dad.
So this week, it was Brian's choice. Brian, I want you to tell us and the audience what movie you chose.
I chose 2006's Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
10 years old, a decade old, this movie.
Yeah.
People forget the subtitle.
Yikes. Yeah. 10 years. Yeah. Okay, so Brian, why don't you go ahead and tell us why you chose this movie?
I chose this movie because I like to watch it. And I don't like to watch all these movies that we've watched here.
But you didn't know it until you watched it. Like, I'd like to watch that movie.
Yeah.
I am a fan of this one. Guys, what did you think? Okay, I've already seen it. Seth, you've seen it, and you're a fan, right?
Yeah.
So really, the only person sitting in this room who had not seen Behind the Mask...
is Paul.
...was Paul. David, what did you what did you think of the movie?
Paul, no lie.
Oh, God.
That's so Paul.
It is very Paul.
Classic Paul.
All right.
I'm pulling a ball on you.
Okay, tell us why. Tell us why. Since we will dive into why the three of us who have already seen the movie dig it. But what turned you off about the film?
Nothing turned me off, actually. I didn't dislike it. I just didn't really
It had
care
a hidden
one.
Corporate agenda.
Well, it did. It was no Ghost Dad.
Never getting away from it, are we?
Not until we watch it.
If we can get away from the fucking Last Witch Hunter, we can get away from Ghost Dad. I have faith in us.
Got away from Last Witch Hunter because we got on Ghost Dad. You got to find a different movie.
That's
as fucking ridiculous. And you can't do it. Did you hear those reviews? You can't do it.
The Last Dad Hunter.
We'll just have to kill them.
Sorry, but it's going to happen. Anyway, Brian, why don't you go ahead and tell us what, I mean, we already know what it's about, but why don't you go ahead and tell the audience what this movie is about?
A documentary crew of film students, I assume that they're film students.
Yeah.
They just say grad.
They're student-y.
Grad students. They follow Leslie Vernon, who is a ritual killer in the vein of Michael Myers and
Fred
Krug and Jay.
Jay, yeah. JV.
And that's pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah, the entire movie is sort of a mockumentary where we follow this group around as they're sort of invited behind the curtain of the slasher character.
Behind the mask, you would say.
Behind the mask. As he basically teaches them the tricks of the trade, how somebody like him would go about setting up a group of victims. And he shows how he would get away with it.
It's called a target group, Jinx.
Target, silly me. He finds a survivor girl and whatnot.
It's only a mockumentary for the first half.
And then it turns into a real movie.
Yeah. Well,
it's like two-thirds.
But it's perfect because it's only like 15 minutes long, the real movie.
Yeah, they didn't have to burn a lot of film,
which says a lot about
it. I was waiting for that part. Yeah.
It opens. It opens with 35 millimeter, I think, doesn't it? There's that great opening sequence where we see the survivor girl getting a sense that Leslie's there, and then it cuts to the documentary footage. And occasionally, like with the library sequence, when Leslie starts stalking her, it cuts back to 35, and then eventually when the actual hunt begins with kids and people getting offed and whatnot, it cuts back to film.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
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 Oh, this talk is going great.
Great opening sequence, you say?
I think you throw the term great around loosely. No, I think it's great in that it's... Okay, so
it's
far
an
as
opening it, sequence?
It is an opening sequence that is much like the rest of the movie that is the horror movie featured here. It's not very polished. It's not effective. It's not scary at all, but I think it's intentionally so. The opening is a little awkward, and I think that's absolutely the intention of the filmmaker. It seemed to me anyway. Am I wrong about this?
I enjoy the opening. I wouldn't say it's great.
Was it great?
I wouldn't say it's great, but it's fine. Fine opening.
I am fine with us splitting hairs, so long as it fills the dead air, I suppose.
Possibly a two gremlin opening.
Yeah. It's no Ghost Dad opening.
No.
Oh, whatever could be. Okay, so, Brian, you chose the movie. Why don't you tell us what you love about it?
Well, it was like one of the... shut up, Paul.
Monster.
It was one of the first movies that I had actually seen that kind of, it's an analysis of itself and then it kind of plays itself type thing, which I know Scream did the same thing, but I feel like this one's more blatant about it.
Oh, sure. It totally is.
Yeah, so it was the first movie that I saw that had just simply laid it out to me. And I was like, oh, I'm dumb. That's what they're doing.
Did you do that at any time?
Yeah.
Really?
I did that.
Then they gave you the twist.
Yeah.
That it wasn't about Kelly at all.
Oh, spoilers.
Oh, my God. That was not a twist.
Really. Paul sees everything coming.
Paul saw that coming.
He saw the new X-Men, so he knows everything.
I secretly think that Paul reads the Wikipedia pages for his movies first. Everyone says, I haven't seen them, he's still not lying.
Paul. Trusted.
Paul, did you have any foreknowledge of this movie before going into it?
Actually, I had not. None.
Seth is shaking his head bullshit.
It's true. I bought it because
you can shake your head yes, no, or
that's
bullshit.
Not true, because I wrote a paper on this in my college course.
Really?
Yep.
That David read and graded.
That you read and graded.
Wow. Possibly graded.
Not read.
No. Possibly.
Oh.
Wow.
No.
God, there's a lot of dead air tonight.
No, I just...
I feel like our energy is off.
No, I just don't know...
Which is weird because...
I was zapped by this movie.
No, I just don't know where to start. I don't know if we want to talk about, like, the plot, the surprise at the end, the way it lays it out, what the film is trying to do, what it does well. I don't know where we start.
It's not a surprise.
So, why don't we start with what you like about it?
I really enjoy... And this is going to be interesting because I hate horror and I hate horror and comedy mixed, but... I do like Leslie.
Great lead performance and yes, I do mean great with underlines. I think Nathan Basil is great.
I think that he instantly wins you over to his side, which is probably what the film is trying to say, because the reason people go see slasher movies, we talk about this thousands of times, is for Freddy, is for Jay and Mike. It's not for the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie sets it up with the most fleshed out character that you come to enjoy is him. It's just not trying to make you think you're not.
Oh, yeah, he's super charismatic. He's likable.
Yeah,
he's still threatening at times.
Yeah, and you don't really give a shit about Taylor the girl. I
kind of like Taylor.
Maybe, but I mean, I don't know. I think that, and even by the end of it, you kind of don't want Leslie to die or lose. You want him to succeed,
which he does.
Right, which is right. I mean, I think that taking what a horror fan thinks about slasher films, but doesn't think they think, and saying no, really, you really do like Freddy Krueger. And you want him to win. You don't want the girl to win. And it shows us that.
But again, okay, we've had this discussion.
So much
so. But I think it's absolutely the case with Behind the Mask, and I think it's the case with a lot of slasher movies. I don't think that's across the board always the case with every horror movie ever.
So much so that they throw Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees in this movie, and you don't give a shit about them. Because they're not Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees.
It is interesting that, I mean, this camera crew is following him around, and they're not only there to serve as, like, you know, the folks documenting what he's doing, but they're kind of his audience in a way.
No, they are.
And so, you know, they know that he's going to be killing people at a certain point, and he gives them the option of stopping several times, I believe, throughout the movie or whatever, and yet they continue along until the end, of course, when they're actually confronted with it. But it's interesting in that it's saying that, you know, the audience is sort of complicit in the murder because they're there to watch it happen.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about the audience that he has in those three is Taylor, Todd, and then the other camera guy, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But Taylor seems to be the one that like
Doug?
that is
Doug.
The
one of them Doug. Looks like Dave Grohl from the Learn to Fly music video.
He absolutely does. Actually,
was that
both,
Taylor?
Actually, they both can,
maybe
they both kind of did. All of them did. Really. he's a chameleon, really. But in Taylor, you have the girl that's like watching these horrible things. She doesn't really want to be there watching it. Much like any boyfriend that would drag his girl to a horror film, they don't usually want to be there. So her eyes are kind of covered. She's very guarded about it. Todd is the guy who's like, oh, that's cool as shit, Leslie. You're awesome. You're great. He's the usual fan. I'm just not sure who Doug is. I guess he's just the passive guy that's just along for the ride.
But, I mean, from what little we learn of him at the very end, I mean, he's the hopeless nerd who's in love with the survivor
he's
girl.
He's
we
the guy just, trying to get in the pants of the girl.
Yeah.
But they're always behind the camera, so we never really get to
right,
know
but
him before that's revealed.
But I like that it's set up that they're each a different version of an audience that would watch a slasher film.
Sure.
And that's kind of cool to me.
That was kind of cool to me, too.
Yeah, it was neat.
Only at that part when they're waiting for him to commit the first murder behind the beaded curtain, whatever it was.
It was like
look, don't explain it to me.
It's important to know.
I
don't care what it was.
Accordion closet, Paul. Accordion closet
yeah.
door.
So that was exactly right, right? It's at that moment where he says, cool.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And so those are your two impulses of your audience. And that's it. Like, they don't take that anymore.
No, well, they don't because by that point, by the time they get to the movie and you actually, like, realize that that's what's happening, it becomes a slasher film. So then they become the characters in the film rather than staying the audience. I don't want to say I wish it would have stayed in the, like, documentary style. I think that if it had, that would have nailed that theme home, but then it would have been a found footage thing. It would have got all awkward and hard
to
shoot.
If they just would have unpacked it in some way,
yeah,
that would have been interesting.
Another thing that I do like about the film is I like how they make fun of non-franchise horror films because Herschel, I don't know, what's the name of the film?
Scott Wilson.
Eugene, the film, I think is his
yeah.
name. He's called...
He was the old school
slasher character.
He's the old school,
character. Kind of like
from the
70s.
50s and 60s.
Yeah, so...
60s and 70s.
And then he talks about how Mike and Jay and Fred, they know what they're doing, and they become a legend because they spawn sequels. Whereas the people that and I believe he says a quote, is it like, they bloody up a sorority house, and they fuck it up for everyone else. Because
they're hacks.
Movies like Sorority Row, Black Christmas, they don't get sequels because they're hacks. So movies that don't get sequels are hacks. And I thought it was really, really funny. I don't know if the director meant for that to happen, but that's how I read it.
I would say totally. Although it is weird, too, though, that he admits that even early on, like the generation that he came from, they were all one-offs, which was the case, too.
I mean,
we didn't have franchise horror
until the 80s.
Until
the 80s. After kind of Michael Myers started to kick it off, and then Jason Voorhees came along, and it was like sequel.
So, I mean, I guess Eugene would represent, I mean, if you have to consider him a slasher character, much like Leslie or any of the other, you know, franchise killers, but he was from the 60s and 70s, what would he be? Would he be Norman Bates? Would he be
Zodiac.
Leatherface?
He's
would
a Zodiac. Or he's the guy from the town that dreaded sundown.
The Phantom Killer,
which is kind of the Zodiac anyway. I think he's probably that kind of guy. It doesn't tell us. It doesn't really matter, but he's that version of a horror film.
He's fantastic at chopping
cards. And that might be why the Leslie thing doesn't work out for him entirely, because at the time the film was made, it was 2006. The slasher thing was kind of dead by then. So really he's fighting against a losing battle against this tide of change that he's desperately trying to keep in his own control. Which, how do they do that with a slasher film in 2006? Well, you had a twist. So it's not about the party girls. It's about the people making the film.
And a found footage.
Right. So he has to add a twist to become the next, like, generation of horror, which is why there was the twist at the end, I think.
Yeah. I dig that.
Cliff sees deeply.
But I like it. I do. This is only the second time that I watched it. I caught more this time than I remember catching the first time. The first time I remember it just kind of being a really kind of funny movie to lay it all out before the tone completely kind of shifts a bit at the end of it. But,
sure.
That's what I enjoy about the film.
Oh, it's a great film. Then I do mean great.
I think so. That's a cool film.
Guys, anything to add? Are we done here? We're 15 minutes in.
I can read some more Ghost ad reviews.
No, it's interesting. I love the performances in this movie.
That would be fine.
Especially the two leads. I mean, again, Basil is great. I think it's Leslie Vernon. Angela, is it Gethels?
The Taylor girl?
Yes. I think it makes for like a really cool spoiler alert survivor girl.
Yeah,
you know, all the way throughout. Even though she's essentially playing Heather Donahue from The Blair Witch for the first three quarters of the movie. But
well, I think she's and she's even just as bad at act, or she acts badly, acting badly
when she's
on purpose. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah, when she's just Taylor,
she's
I think
like
she's very good.
Camera,
when
she's
she is.
Like, now tell me, Leslie, how did you feel? I feel like you want her to go into the club.
Oh, she's great. It's love all of that stuff when she's playing to the camera as, well, a Heather type.
Yeah, well, and the film itself is, I mean, it completely plays to every horror fan. I mean, it lays out every aspect of a typical film like this. It even is like, well, you know, she's going to empower herself with cock because she's grabbing the phallic weapon or whatever. And he's like, that always happens. And all I could actually think in that moment was, that doesn't happen in Freddy films. Nobody grabs a phallic object to defeat Freddy till Nightmare 6 when she's on the bat.
I mean, arguably, Halloween is like the prototype for all of these movies, too. And how does Michael Myers get defeated at the end? He gets shot to death.
Which is kind of a dick. Well, a gun is a dick, Jinx.
Is it because they even point out in Behind the Mask at a certain point that Leslie wasn't simply just going to get shot? You know,
it had to be something. But I mean, a gun.
As he says, I mean, long and hard.
A gun is a phallic object. Just the final girl in Halloween isn't the one that actually grabbed it.
Right. It's
the Ahab.
Sam Loomis.
Yeah, the Ahab, as they could call him. Which is actually a really cool term. I like that term a lot.
Oh, it's great. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Ahab,
it doesn't at all.
His point in Moby Dick is entirely different from, but, you know, Leslie Vernon does say in this context.
It's a guy chasing the whale who ends up dying.
That's what he meant.
I think, honestly, that's how surface it is about calling it, you know, Ahab, because it's a guy looking for something and then he dies.
Who in this movie
doctor
is
in every film is chasing the killer.
I had never read Moby Dick, so thanks for that.
Spoiler. Can you look up the Amazon reviews?
In this movie, our Ahab is the Sam Loomis type, is Doc Halloran, played by Robert Englund.
Freddy Krueger.
Old Ben.
Jason Voorhees.
Is the Halloran a Shining reference?
Really?
Was that a Shining reference? Doc Halloran?
Probably. Same thing with, I think, Leslie Vernon's real name is Leslie Mancuso, which is a horror nod to. Mancuso was a producer on the Friday the 13th films. We have Kane Hodder on Elm Street early on in the film, which is kind of fun. There are lots of...
There was the girls jump roping at the school in the white dresses.
Zelda Rubinstein plays the librarian. She, of course, was...
is she in Poltergeist?
Yes. She was a Poltergeist lady.
Okay. That's fair. But no, I think that's what I think that my only issue with the film, and the film is definitely fun to watch, is that I think that the director and the writer, did the guy who directed it also wrote it?
No.
Okay. Well, it
Scott
seems like,
Glosserman directed, and is it David Steve
Stoff
who wrote
either,
it?
Either of them or both of them. It seems like they wanted to say something about this type of film, and they started to. Like David said, they don't ever take it entirely all the way. It's like they don't deconstruct it all the way. Like they kind of open the lid and look at it, but they don't actually take it all out.
It just seems like that lid has been opened before.
Well, it has, and I think the reason that they don't go any further is because they do get so caught up in let's put Easter eggs, let's make jokes about other films. And I think it got caught up in that, which is probably why it's such a popular film. Because had they have taken it all the way, I think some fans would have been put off by having to think a lot about it. And the more that you think, not that horror films like to think, but that if a film makes you think too much, and you don't want that, you might end up hating it. Because if it deconstructs it all the way, it's going to keep going, and it might make some fans feel a bit prickly about what it's saying about the genre and the fans.
It's the same reason I haven't watched Cloud Atlas yet. I just don't want to think about it.
Okay, but there is always that danger. I mean, when it comes to reviewing something, I mean, the worst way to review something, it's said, is to talk about what you would have done. But for the purpose of this podcast and padding our time here, so far as taking it all the way, what would you like to have seen out of the movie that could have furthered those ideas and still kept the movie entertaining, do you think?
Paul? You're looking at me, Seth?
Yeah.
I don't know what it should have done, but the entire first long section of the movie where he's simply explaining all of the tropes of the slasher film is just one long exposition. Really, nothing happens.
No.
It could be like a giant you know, dissertation.
No, it is. I mean, and that's exactly what it is, I think.
And all of that stuff, a book report. Yeah, all of that stuff, as we said, we talked about already in relation to all of these movies. So being a horror fan, which I'm not sure I am, I don't need to see this explained to me because I've already dissected movies in that way.
So you,
if there are fans out there who need that,
right?
I just don't. I don't know if they're really there. If you're
right, so you would probably classify this as a film that thinks it's smarter than it really is. It thinks it's doing something really clever and smart, but because it's been done to death, and
it's been done before,
and everybody knows these tropes anyway.
Right?
Why bother explaining them?
That's why I thought at that moment when they start embodying two sides of the audience, okay,
yeah.
Then I thought, okay, it's now going to deconstruct us as an audience, and it never really does that.
It didn't do it. I like that it starts to. I really wish that they would have went. I don't know what they would have done to make it deconstruct it more. I mean, maybe if, I don't know, maybe you have.
Other than acknowledging that those types of audience members exist, I don't know where you would take that idea.
I guess you could have, like, even during the slasher part at the end, like, she's trying to figure out the plan, like, if she actually, like, figured it out and then, like, turned it on its head and type thing. Like, just had a completely different.
Yeah, because the thing about it is that she plays right into what Leslie wanted her to anyway. Which, and maybe that's what it's saying, is that every single slasher film, no matter how smart it seems, is going to play to the formula of it.
I think
including the film that is deconstructing the entire genre.
Sure.
I think if they deconstruct that, and like, you know, if they begin to deconstruct the audience, then we as an audience begin to feel uncomfortable with the fact that we are
being
loving
put on display.
Yeah, or not only that, but that we are now showing that we love the kind of things that we aren't supposed to kind of love.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But well, because, I mean, Todd, every time he says that's cool or look at that, Taylor is always there to quickly say, Todd, you know, don't do that, don't say that.
Todd.
Yeah, because Todd's the guy that wants to see everything.
He's libido, she's conscience.
Yeah, yeah. And Doug is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. I think Doug is just the camera.
Yeah.
Right. He is the apparatus.
Yeah. Yeah. Doug's a way for us to watch it being shot.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there's that, too. Because these kinds of films always have to have three of them, that way two of them can have a camera. Because I mean, Blair Witch was exactly the same way. You have to have two of them, that way one person can show it being shot. Otherwise, it's just a shaky cam nonsense.
Yeah.
Which is what Blair Witch eventually became. But that's not the
case. I thought in Blair Witch they just passed around the camera.
There were two. There was a 16mm and a 50.
Yeah, there was a black and white. And then
they should have just dropped it and quit rolling. Yeah. Have I mentioned that I don't like the Blair Witch Project?
You have many times.
I'm with you on that one. I don't like the Blair Witch.
Nobody enough.
This is a much cooler film.
But you know, so I really do dig the ending when they get drawn into his, as it's noted in the film, his equation. You know, like his movie that he has set up or whatever. I don't know that. You know, once they do that, they have to embody different types of characters. So I don't know how they could have continued representing the audience.
Well, I mean,
like Taylor couldn't continue being the conscience of the audience and the final girl.
Well, no, but I mean, they kind of still do. I mean, I'm with David. I don't think that they take it as far as they could, but they do a little further after they all get involved in the film because they know everything. They know what he's going to do. And as an audience, whenever we watch a film, like, oh, I would do that. Why are you going that way? I would go that way. So when the audience, through Taylor and Todd, are put into this film, you would think they'd be like, oh, they know what's going on. But no, they fall right into it. No, they don't know what's going on. They don't know what to do. No audience member would know what to do in a situation. But every audience member is very okay with the idea that, oh, I could run up those stairs instead of out that window and do it. When he actually puts the audience into his film, they can't because the slasher always wins. Right. He has to always win. Because he has to have a franchise.
Which this one, sadly,
did not. It didn't have a franchise.
Not sadly. It didn't need one.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't. Yeah. They left it open at the end of it because he gets his head crushed and he gets burned alive.
Kind of. in a way, you know, it's strange. Dave brought in the Blu-ray for us to watch, which was put out by, the Blu-ray was put out by Anchor Bay. What's weird is, I was noting this earlier, in the mid-aughts, Anchor Bay released a lot of original horror movies that went straight to DVD. Behind the Mask was one, Hatchet was another, a few Adam Green things like Spiral.
Frozen.
I forget what else. Frozen came a few years later, and they were always loaded. This was back during the DVD boom. They were loaded with bonus features. And weirdly enough, when they eventually got ported over to Blu-ray, none of the bonus features survived. But
that's how you make them $7, Jinx.
On the Behind the Mask DVD that initially came out back in 2006, there was this neat alternate ending. It wasn't an alternate ending. It was just an extra moment that was added where the Apple Press that Taylor uses to kill Leslie, she crushes his head in it, right? It's revealed that that was just another part of his design. Yeah. There was a fake door that he could just press down like that was on springs. It's so funny. You could hear her breathing and panting above him, but it cuts back to him, and he just sort of lowers his head down, and he holds up into frame a nutcracker with a walnut. And the moment when his head is supposed to be crushed, he just goes... And so much fun. There was that. There were loads of deleted scenes. One of my favorites was early on Taylor asking Leslie how he can just walk slowly after victims while they're running their asses off. And
it's all that cardio.
Yeah. Well, there is that. They do the cardio thing, but he actually does a
Is that like where he he's actually full sprinting, but whenever she looks back, he's just walking?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's a great little demonstration. Cool. And then she trips right before the end, and he just saunters by her, and she's like, "God, I don't know what happened. I just tripped there at the end." Yeah, that happens a lot of times.
Yeah. It's cool. Well, and I like, and I don't know if "likes" the right word, but I mean Leslie, because like he lays out why he's doing these things, why he needs a final girl, why he kills people that have sex, why he kills people that are all like drugged up. And. And everything he says is kind of what a lot of horror fans have like theorized about Jason and other slashers of, well, they're killing you because you're doing bad, immoral things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's bullshit. And then when Leslie is and like he is like telling us this is why we do it, like, dude, you're full of shit. That's the dumbest reason ever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's even I don't know why a lot of horror fans like this, because it's saying your movies are pretty much shit. and they're predictable, and the reasons behind why they're doing it are shallow and dumb.
They're not moralist.
Well, no, that's kind of the thing, and it's pointing that out. So I don't know why a lot of horror fans like this film, because it is so much tearing it down and showing you what's wrong with
it. It's kind of like Detention.
Oh, God. No, it's not. It's really not.
I don't think it's like Detention.
It's not like... No,
whereas,
I think... It's
Detention, much smarter movie.
You know, as a guy, though, who...
Scream was able to also kind of show you the tropes, but do it in a way that you didn't feel almost insulted by watching it?
No, not at all.
I'm not saying that
I think it's because Scream wrapped it up in a narrative of its own, so you had to somewhat dig it out that narrative.
Right.
Whereas here, that's what I was saying, that entire long introductory section is just a recitation.
Sure, it's somebody pulling back the curtain and just sort of saying, here's what
this is.
But to me, that's still enjoyable, though, especially considering that, you know, I am a horror fan, but I'm not the biggest fan of slasher cinema, especially from the 80s, for all of the reasons that this poke's fun at. You know, kind of why I enjoy the movie. I'm able to laugh at this in a way that I can't really get much enjoyment out of, like, a typical Friday the 13th sequel, you know.
Well, because those movies are terrible.
So, but it
for
is
all
funny.
The reason Leslie lays out for us. They're horrible films.
Yeah. And yeah, but oddly enough, you know, there are certain new slashers that I can enjoy because they recognize the pitfalls of those movies and find other ways to make them enjoyable. You know, it's weird. In the same year that Behind the Mask came out, I think it was 2000. Well, maybe it was a year later. It was 2006 for Behind the Mask, 2007 for Hatchet. Yeah. But they were both sending up slasher movies, but they were doing it in very different ways. Behind the Mask sort of uncovers what makes one tick. Hatchet just sort of revels.
Yeah, I can't watch modern slasher films because they're all just stupid.
Oh.
I can't think of one that's come out in the past decade.
Has there been a modern slasher film?
Hatchet.
There was the Hatchet trilogy. There was...
That's modern.
There was, even though it's a decade old now. God.
I'm counting post-2000.
Yeah. 70 years in DVD time.
Scream 4 does not count. It's part of a series of films.
Scream 4.
But can we count the Scream television series? Because it's doing something quite different.
But, like,
it's where everything's going horror-wise, anyways, television.
I just can't get into slasher films. Maybe because I know how they all work now. So... None of them ever do anything different.
Does any horror movie do anything different now?
I don't know.
I think some do.
You
think so?
But I think slasher movies are very formulaic.
Well, they are. Right? Well, because I think that with slasher films, I mean, they know what you want, they know how to play it. Because there is almost, like in this film, Leslie almost seems to have a Bible of what to do to slash someone and a group of people. And that's like the Bible that everyone in Hollywood uses to make a slasher film.
But what are the most recent slasher films that you can think of?
Scream 4 is the last one I could think of.
I can't think of any.
That was the last big screen slasher, probably. I mean, there have been, you know,
we're in the paranormal phase where everything's just ghost movies and demon movies.
I mean, other than remakes, of course. We had a Nightmare remake. We had the Friday the 13th remake, the Chainsaw Flicks. You know, so far as like direct to DVD and VOD and whatnot, we've had, I mean, there was the Hatchet trilogy. There was
Trash.
Laid to Rest and Chrome Skull, which were a lot of fun.
I don't even know what those are.
Does Hush count as a slasher film?
No. More a home invasion flick, I would think. Even though, I mean, hell, he is a masked slasher in a way, but
I don't. I just don't.
It wasn't a body count movie.
And it's funny. It's almost like I don't know if there's a connection to this film, but it's almost like the timing works out that after I saw this film, I couldn't enjoy slasher films anymore because I saw Hatchet after this and fucking hated it. But I bet if I had seen Hatchet 2 years earlier, I would have loved it.
Could be.
But it's like, after watching this film, I can't enjoy slasher films anymore.
It could be a great double feature, but just make certain you watch Hatchet first.
I'd be so mad. If I watched Behind the Mask before, like double feature before watching Hatchet, I would turn Hatchet off. Because I don't like that film.
So weirdly enough, the movie that this most reminds me of isn't so much Scream, even though, I mean, they're both taking aim at the slasher genre, and the movie that I'm about to mention doesn't so much as looking at the horror genre as a whole. But did you guys like Cabin in the Woods?
No.
I actually did like
it. I felt like that movie was too late. You said that this was too late, that it's already been done before, but I felt like Cabin in the Woods was like 20 years too late.
Oh, exactly. It was too late. I mean, I enjoyed it, though. I did. But that's not a slasher film. It isn't, but in the way that it sort of attacks the genre, it reminds
me most of Behind the Mask.
Yeah, and that might be why I like Behind the Mask, because it is attacking it. I think that's cool. probably why I enjoyed Cabin in the Woods, but like, I can't watch a break. Like, I can't even end the last slasher film that I saw after Hatchet. I guess Scream 4. And I mean the remakes, but I can't think of an original slasher film that I've watched past Hatchet that wasn't a sequel or a remake of something.
And I wonder, I mean, you know, the genre is always kind of cyclical in a way, but what's weird is, you know, we had the slasher glut in the 80s after Halloween was huge in 79, mm-hmm. and then more so, I would argue, after Friday the 13th, and that's when everything got really cynical. But those movies died out by the end of that decade and weren't really resurrected until 96 with Scream, at which point, you know, Scream was funny and satirical, but it seemed like the movies that sort of followed in its wake were the lessons they took from Scream were, well, let's hire a really pretty cast.
You know,
that could be on the WB, and let's make it really slick and polished in the ways that the 80s slicks weren't or whatever. But that only lasted until about 2002. We're a decade and a half on now, and I haven't really seen slashers get reinvented in any way. The only slasher movies that we have these days are remakes or throwbacks, and I'm curious to see if we're ever going to see somebody take it someplace new, or if there is indeed any place new to take it.
I did
enjoy the Town That Dreaded Sundown remake, because I felt like that was very unique, because they were actually playing on the movie that came before it.
Yeah, so, the remake exists within the world of, or rather, the original film exists within the world of the remake.
As a story or as a film?
As a story.
As a film.
As a story as well, because they're actually like recreating the murders in the original movie.
It's
like playing in the town.
It's so strange. It's so incredibly meta, but not in a way that's sort of. I didn't roll my eyes once in the movie, but you know, there's a 70s film called The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which is based on a series of murders that happened in the 1930s. The remake isn't really a remake. It's just another movie called The Town That Dreaded Sundown, and in the world of that movie, there is a film called The Town That Dreaded Sundown from the 70s that was based on the murders from the 30s that are now being recreated in the new film.
Is it predictable?
No, not really. It has a lot of...
Is it predictable?
You can't tell me you knew who the killer was.
I didn't know who the killer was, no.
Or who was going to die.
It still follows a lot of the tropes that the slasher genre
right.
Sure. But it does so in more of a... it never felt like a slasher movie.
I felt like it was different. It was different enough to keep me engaged.
And it was sort of very beautifully made, too. It's the guy who directed it had done several episodes of American Horror Story, which, love it or hate it, those episodes usually look kind of amazing. He also wound up doing the movie, was it Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl or something like that, which I never saw. But
it wasn't very good.
Never seen that movie.
Really, which is a weird, you know, to...
It wasn't very good.
Is
that a teen cancer movie?
My question for you.
Yes, actually.
and Behind the Mask has kind of turned into a discussion about, I guess, slasher films in general. So to fill our time.
That's what they should do.
So you mentioned that after Scream, they took away, let's cast a lot of like pretty actors.
Sure.
And make it polished. Why do so many slasher fans or horror fans hate that films look good?
I honestly don't know, and I've never understood that. My cousin
was that same way. Like, unless it looked like shit, he wouldn't watch it.
Honestly, I think there is a... Look, I got my seat. I love Fangoria. I do. I grew up with that magazine, but I noticed it even then in the letters columns when... You know, even Scream, when it came out, there were certain fans who dug it, but the moment that we started getting movies like Urban Legend, or which is not very good, or I Know What You Did Last Summer, which admittedly isn't very good. I have fun with I Know What You Did Last Summer, at least. I still Know What You Did Last Summer. I'll fight you guys on because it's terrible. But
that one has Brandy in it.
It also has Dr. Herbert West. But
yeah, it does, isn't it?
No, what's interesting is I think... At around that time, if you were a horror fan that, say, read Fangoria, a lot of what you were getting was this sort of negativity poured toward this new generation of slasher films. Yeah, exactly. And you had all of these, like, old school guys who grew up in the 80s or who were probably already died-in-the-wool genre fans by the 80s saying, this is just, you know, they're knocking off stuff from back then and it's too slick and polished as though that's a bad thing. And meh. I think now...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want it.
But what's weird is I think now we have, you know, sort of the active generation so far as, like, viewers who would probably still go to theaters and watch these movies if indeed they would get released or made, grew up with Friday the 13th and hold on to those. And anything that attempts to do that but in a different way, I wonder if it's too jarring for them. Case in point is Friday the 13th, the remake that Platinum Dunes did in 2009. That is a damn good-looking movie. Daniel Pearl shot it. It's gorgeous at times. A
lot of gold.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always doing the magic hour.
Yes.
That's when they shoot everything. Even at night.
Or like deep blue nighttime. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and it has like a good-looking cast, and it moves quickly. And
swishy
it is very, yeah. It's very slick and polished. And yet, story-wise, it's no better or worse. It's arguably better than a lot of the fucking sequels in the 80s.
It's a bit tighter.
Fans hate that movie, hate it as though it's the worst film they have ever seen, and yet it's like, is it so much worse than the previous Friday the 13th?
I don't think there's anything worse than those.
Anything?
It could be argued.
Do you think?
So I don't know if it's just a matter of being too cool for school when it comes to like certain movies like
part
that.
Part of me thinks it's that.
Maybe it's because it's popular. You know, there's much more of a chance that mainstream audiences will turn up to a Friday the 13th remake as opposed to a sequel title.
Don't these same fans like these Insidious and Paranormal Activity movies that are super popular in the Saw franchise? And
It's hit and miss. Honestly, there are large swaths of fandom right now that just fucking hate any of the paranormal.
Maybe
stuff.
We're like so cool that we hate the horror genre because it's so mainstream. Maybe that's where we're
I
at.
I think that is
That's it.
Wow.
So, do you think
we're way above it?
I'm gonna try to phrase this question in the most pretentious way that I possibly can.
Okay.
Do you think in 2016? So we're in the era, like Brian said, of these ghosts and demon movies, right?
Not ghost dad.
In a post Behind the Mask world.
Sure.
Could the slasher genre actually come back? Like in like a real way, not like direct to video anchor bay shit. Like actually back and become big and be like the temple horror films.
It's original ones,
not like remakes of other films.
I mean sure.
It's
I mean the horror
TV now. I mean
yeah, I mean that's the thing. That's
camp slasher show coming out on Freeform.
Right, but
we have Scream Queens. Yeah, we have Scream the TV series.
But aren't those things funny too? I mean they're not just straight up horror films, right?
Right.
Or
right.
Horror shows. I'm talking like
well, there's
forward.
The chiller show Slasher, which I haven't seen, but as I understand is a straightforward slasher, only done as a television series. But it, so far, is it coming back in a big way? I don't know. I mean, horror is always cyclical, and yet, you know, what the best we could do with the slasher genre, which is teaspoon deep anyway, is what we got out of the 80s where they're stalking slasher,
or at best
10 Little Indians with a guy with a knife, or we have... You know, the satirical stuff or the spit and polish versions or whatever that we got late 90s. But what would it be if it came back yet again?
I mean,
God knows.
I mean, but do you think the reason it hasn't is because of it's been so long since those films were out and we have films like Scream, Behind the Mask, Cabin in the Woods, that nobody cares to see them because they all know everything now? I mean, could they? I mean, I would love to see a slasher film that's wholly like an original film that would make me enjoy that again. But. I don't know if it's going to happen because it. Every time that I think it's going to be something new, it never is.
But what do you think, you know, I had this conversation with somebody before where we talked about Psycho. Is that a slasher film? I mean, it's a guy with a knife who has a disguise who kills people. Sure. But, you know, what's most important to the slasher genre?
Cabins.
Is it a person with a knife who kills people or is it the formula? And I think it's the formula.
I think it's to set them up
and knock them down of those movies. And so how do you change a formula? And
no, I mean,
make it
I know.
Something
I mean,
else.
I mean, you don't have to.
New.
You don't have to change a formula.
You could either,
but I mean,
follow the
I
formula mean, or comment on the formula. But what's the third option?
I mean, you could make me see the formula in a different way. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's a thing. Maybe there isn't another way to do it, and Slasher is dead.
I mean, it might very well be.
We killed it.
I think we'll continue to get remakes. I think we'll continue to get throwbacks that wink and nod at the audience. I think we'll get. Franchise flicks. I mean, we're getting another Halloween. Inevitably, there'll be another Friday the 13th. They'll find a way to bring back a Nightmare on Elm Street. But as far as getting something new, I don't know that we will.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why exactly the slasher genre died. Maybe it was just too much too fast. And then it seemed like...
And maybe because it is that the formula is so limiting in a way, whereas... I mean, when I say slasher movie, you already have a pretty good idea in your head of what that's going to entail.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
When I say ghost story... Or a paranormal movie that can be.
I feel like those are very formulaic as well.
Well, they are, but they don't
they
have
are,
to be.
I think they are now because we've. I think we're. Because
we get one every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know how they're all going to work. I mean, maybe. I know for me when I saw.
But that could also include
when I saw
like
the first
the
Insidious
haunting,
film. I wasn't entirely sure
how
it worked. But then again, I guess if I look back to Insidious, I did know pretty much how it was going to go. The only thing different was that the twist at the end was that the guy came back and it wasn't him. It was the old lady. That was a twist I didn't see coming.
Well, I also enjoyed the fact that, I mean, usually in haunted house movies, they're confined to one location that for whatever reason they elect not to leave. I thought it was fun and insidious that
they left.
At a certain point, they're like, eh, fuck this, we're leaving, and the haunting follows them.
Yeah.
But even in those movies, you might not know what the twist is, but you know the twist is coming.
Right, yeah. Well, it's a thing. Yeah, is it, I mean, but I guess we could say that about any genre of film.
I would say that was the case with Insidious because it felt like Insidious felt like a modern Poltergeist, and Poltergeist was very 50s and 60s in the way it's like
they
you
already
know,
did a modern
once...
Poltergeist. It has Sam Rockwell.
It did not feel like a modern Poltergeist to me.
Does he dance?
You know, but once the monster is slain or you know the ghosts are defeated or whatever, then you know sunshine comes out. Everybody's happy or whatever. The cool thing about Insidious is once everything was done, there was that final moment that was sort of chilling.
I really enjoy Insidious 1 and 2. I enjoyed them a lot.
I enjoyed Insidious 3 for that matter.
I mean, Insidious 3 I like, but my problem with Insidious 3 is it's the exact same as Insidious 1 without the twist at the end of it.
Yeah.
It's the exact same film. Except they don't leave and there's no twist at the end. whereas Insidious 1, for whatever reason, demons in films scare the shit out of me. I don't know why, but they do. But then, in Insidious, you get what's basically a pretty straightforward haunting film. Then there's a twist that, okay, they're leaving, but the haunting, like you said, if it follows them. But
and Insidious 2 is just batshit insane. It's a possession film.
Well, Insidious 2, it's a possession film, but it's a domestic disturbance film. Is what it is. It's a guy beating up his kids and wife,
so many
but
categories.
Because he's possessed.
I do
enjoy both those films, and
it's
I will always enjoy
dramedy.
Those films. But I am curious to see what the next age of cinema horror is, and what trope that we now gut until it's dead, because we have gutted the ghost demon thing to death in like 6 years. So
and even before that, with the J horror stuff, I mean that
yeah,
was
yeah. Well,
all.
That's the thing is now it's so quick because slashers lasted for 15 years or more. Arguably,
well, 10 years throughout the '80s. I mean, late '70s throughout the '80s,
and then
the '90s was just a.
Then he killed it again with Scream.
The '90s was all over the place. I mean, it was sort of a wasteland up until Scream, at which point everything was you know slick slashers.
It was whatever works.
And then J-horror, and then
torture
porn,
movie.
And
yeah.
then
yeah.
remakes, and then paranormal
yeah,
slash
well,
found
and
footage.
I, and I wonder if then it's...
Either
if,
or.
And that amazing powerhouse M. Night Shyamalan.
I don't know what his films are.
I like his first three.
But I mean...
Good?
I mean,
good.
I mean, it's,
they're
it's,
fine.
You know, old people horror.
Old people horror. That was okay. Do you think then that... I mean, because everything obviously... It all, I mean, everything kind of like comes and goes. It seems like slasher is the only thing that's not truly come back in a big way. Do you think that it
other
will?
Than the late '90s? I mean,
no, but I mean,
since
but I, no. but I mean, in, since 2000s, because I mean, we've had ghosts, we've had monsters, we've had demons, we've had all that shit come back, but we've not had slashers. Really
Kaiju,
come back. Yeah,
weirdly enough, for a bit. But Pacific Rim, Godzilla, we're getting a new King Kong.
Yeah, maybe you just need more time.
Yeah, but I mean, I hope when it comes back, it's interesting. That's
what I mean. Or is it just going to be more of the same with hot young actors of the time?
Well, part of it is that I think a slasher film, they're not horror films because they're not meant to be scary. Because
I think some are. I
don't think they are, or they can be, because like this film should show us, you're meant to spend time with the killer, not the kids he's killing. Leslie is the hero of this film.
See, that's,
and so the slasher in itself is who you're, is so.
I think that's true a lot of the time.
Then you can't be afraid.
That's the one thing that Scream does really well, is that you don't really care about Ghostface at all, but you really do connect with Sidney in that.
You don't show up to Scream for fucking Ghostface.
No.
It's Sidney all the way through.
Yeah, but
same thing with Texas Chainsaw. You're there with Sally and her friends for an
hour. Leatherface, yeah.
Guys, who, okay.
Totally.
Sequels, I agree, especially the second one, which is a fucking farce.
Leatherface all the way.
Yep.
Okay, so when you watch Texas Chainsaw for the first time, I'm not saying you know that you're there for Leatherface. Okay, let's go back to 1974, if you guys will allow me.
Brian is 45 years old.
You sit down to what you know is going to be a horror movie, and you spend the first hour of the film with Sally Hardesty and her friends. Leatherface is not in that movie a whole hell of a lot. You're not there to cheer him on to kill people.
You know he's there, though.
Yeah, I think you do.
You're just ready for him to come out.
And part of that might be because these films have kind of existed since we've all been alive, you know, most of us. It's impossible not to connect with the killer, because you can't show a kid Texas Chainsaw and have him not know that Leatherface is going to be gutting everyone.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem with it. And then with every slasher film that has come along after, they don't keep anything in the dark. I mean, with Hatchet, you knew about Crowley you knew what was going to happen. So there's no suspense in it anymore. And Scream, the only reason it did it well is because Wes Craven was trying to throw it all away. But slasher films don't tend to do that. They want you.
No,
to
typically
see
not. Yeah, most of the time it's meant to be a.
I mean, you know,
parade
the
score
going in. Yeah. So I don't know if slasher films can be anything more than just watching the killer do its thing. Hmm. I mean, Behind the Mask, as cool as I think that the film is, that's what it was. It was just, as opposed to us watching him do his thing and figure it out, he just told us what he was going to do, and then we watched him do it.
Yeah,
that was the only difference it had with other slasher films. But I mean, that's why I can't connect. Like I said, I mean, everybody knows the score now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know.
Yeah.
That's the end of my statement. I don't know what else to say.
No, I mean, ultimately, so far as like slasher movies go, God knows where they'll go next. I don't think there's anything left for them to do. If you're looking at last week's feature, I mean, it's like I was asking again or whatever, what's more important to a slasher movie, the slasher character or the formula or whatever? Brian mentioned, could Hush be considered a slasher film? And it's like, no, it is a home invasion flick. It is somebody confined within their house or whatever getting preyed upon. That's not really a slasher movie. Right. And yet, the lead character wears a mask.
But he technically doesn't slash, he shoots.
He just shoots
arrows at people.
No, he stabs that one girl.
Oh, yeah,
times.
That's true. Yeah.
He stabs the hell out of her.
Shit out of her.
God, Brian, you forgot that one.
He's not slashing her.
That's the only thing I can imagine that the slasher genre could go to is taking the notion of a slasher itself and then dropping them into a different type of plot.
But I
think you would have to leave I think the formula's been done to the death, and it's such a simple formula anyway.
I don't know that you can muck with it that much. I think that you could. I think that the problem is that it's so much easier just to play into it because they know that if they just make a 90-minute film about a guy in the bayou ripping off people's heads, it's going to sell. That's what horror fans want.
I feel like at this point, any horror movie just sells, though.
It totally does. I mean, any movie...
I mean, I went to go see Oculus like a week after it was out, and it was still sold out.
Yeah.
Oculus.
I liked Oculus.
I've never seen Oculus. Yeah. But I mean, I think
bringing
that
in.
I don't know.
It's on Netflix.
I don't know how, but there has to be ways to make a slasher film original.
I think if you find the way, you should.
Well, there has to
be. I'm not sure you can do that.
You won't be able to sell it because Hollywood will not want that.
I think the best you can do is attach it to some cultural relevance that we have not come in contact with.
Yeah.
And otherwise, if you just do a straight slasher film, then you're preying on nostalgia.
Yeah, and maybe the thing is that just by calling it a slasher film, you've already damned it because the formula's there.
Except for, you know, the fans or whatever, because nostalgia is huge with horror fans. Visit any horror convention or whatever. I mean, they run on that as opposed to anything new.
So,
most new.
So you would say on the horror podcast we're doing, horror fans don't like new things.
No, I'd say there is a I'd say a lot of horror fans appreciate comfort food viewing.
That's fair.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm not gonna.
Yes.
I mean,
no,
there's nothing.
I just had to be Paul.
No. I don't think there's anything.
Get
I mean,
out of here.
If somebody just wants to watch 90 minutes of blood and carnage or whatever for the hell of it, I, you know,
sure,
why not? But
that's why I don't think it becomes very difficult to detach, say, what was it, Hush, from the slasher movies, because it really just is about the murder of the human body.
Well, Hush was kind of, I mean, it was kind of like every third act of a slasher film. She was the final girl, but for all of it.
Yeah. But I think home invasion movies are like that, just like torture porn is the same thing. How much
torture porn
can
is,
the human body
is
endure?
The first, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, which is.
And we go there as Todd. We don't go there as Taylor.
We can. I think some of those movies are made for Todd. I think some of those movies are made for Taylor.
None of those movies are made for Taylor.
I don't think they are.
I absolutely think they are. I think when you look at Hostel.
Do I have to again?
I saw one of those.
You spend an hour with the guys leading up to it.
I don't know.
Hating them more and more as they go through the movie?
Yep.
Well, they are very unlikable characters, but it was interesting to watch, say, Paxton's arc in that and the fact that he tries to redeem himself by the end.
I think
if a movie is going to be, you know, there, especially when it comes to the slasher movies of the 80s and people who enjoy those, I think those movies are certainly to show up and have a laugh at. If you're talking Friday the 13th, if you can get a laugh out of them.
Nope.
But if you're going to be scared and I feel...
You want to be Paul?
I feel like we're treading the same materials podcast. But if a movie is going to be scary, if a movie is going to be frightening to an audience, genuinely frightening, I think you're going to have to be Taylor, or they're going to have to be presenting it to Taylor. You're going to have to care about the people going through the terrible stuff.
But it's a lot easier to make a movie for Todd.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's much easier to just sling some blood around.
Leslie told us
show
that.
Show some carnage. Sure.
I mean, he told us that with
and maybe that's why most slasher movies turn me off, is because I'm not interested in just showing up to watch a guy hack a bunch of fucking people
up. Well, I think that's and like you said, I mean, you're not interested in that. I think with Leslie, he's telling us for the first two-thirds of the film, he's making a movie for Taylor. Really, he's making a movie for Todd.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's, I, you know.
Damn it, I never thought of it that way. I like the movie a little bit more.
And then the mask is that. That's why I think that the audience thing is really what they nearly got all the way.
Yeah, they would have done that.
They nearly had it. I mean, I still enjoy the film for it kind of like, for it reflects on the film that also destructs the film. But, my only problem is that I wish they would have been a bit further on the Taylor
but don't we,
audience thing.
Okay, but like so far as the audience thing goes, again, we talked about how once they actually step into the roles within Leslie's movie, they have to cease being the audience members, right?
Exactly.
But at that point,
which
don't
is why they suck at their job.
Sure, but...
I'm not even sure they have to
can
cease being
even,
the audience.
I just wonder if at that point when that shift happens, that's also the moment when they put away their cameras and it stops being a mockumentary and it's just a film. We sort of assume those roles, don't we, at that point?
We do, but I mean but they're not us. We're at that point we're watching them.
We're still the audience.
And
I mean we're the audience,
but what's happened is that Todd and Taylor have got up from our seats and walked into the film and now we're watching them.
It's like Last
Action
Hero.
We're still away from it. In a way, you're the hobo asleep in that movie.
Oh man.
But I mean I think that there had to have been ways to have kept that going, but at the end of the day, I mean, it may have been so far along in the film that it would have been half an hour longer, or then you couldn't have had a 15-minute slasher film if they were still the audience and Taylor still knew what was up. Which, even though she did know what was up, she still didn't know.
Nah.
But I don't know.
I don't know. Overall,
I should have known, though.
Well, and she did.
She did know, yeah.
But he kept changing his plan because his plan that he told us all along was a fake plan.
Right.
It was a feint.
But it's
bluff.
Not like adding them to that plan didn't really change the plan that much.
No.
Other than they become victims.
Yeah, just he just hid certain facts from them.
Yeah. Like you, two people went to the shed, not one.
Yeah. Do you think, though, and this is, I don't know if I have anything else to say after this, but and this is more of a plot thing. Do you think Eugene and his wife knew that Leslie planned to use Taylor instead?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Almost 100. Yes, especially watching it a second time and watching how they act around her and how they study
her.
He's
like, I like her. She's a firecracker. She's a
spitfire. And not only that, but because, I mean, especially Eugene's wife, because she recognizes in her what she used to be. I mean, Eugene's wife was a final girl that just happened to win him
over. To marry the slasher.
And, yeah, she married. So is this the plan for all these killers, supposedly, is to get the final girl to be their wife?
I don't think it is because
that's interesting.
Because according to Leslie, in his mind, he seems to be performing a service to make the girl better.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah, but in like a weird obsession, like he wants to keep coming after her in sequels way, not a I want to marry you way.
I think it's like, this is my level, and I need you to get up here with me.
That way we can love
that
each other?
Be.
Yeah.
Well, because Taylor did ask him if he loved Kelly, and he refused to answer. So maybe
Kelly?
There's...
Oh, that Kelly. Yeah.
Kelly was the non-virgin.
You also have to think that maybe they're not talking about romantic love, right? Because his name Doug, he stands in for the romantic love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, and yeah.
That's not the kind of love that...
That Leslie wants.
She would have been the yin to his yang.
Maybe.
And was.
Or maybe he would have just stalked her with Behind the Mask 2, 3, and 4.
Which we're never going to get, unfortunately. Weirdly enough, I mean, the movie came out in 2006, and as I understand it, was kind of a success. I mean, critics, yeah, or at least horror critics, really dug the movie.
It was
very well received. It made a lot of money on DVD. For whatever reason, they waited a full 5 or 6 years before deciding to pursue a sequel, and by that point, the audience had gone away. Apparently, I think Anchor Bay was going to put up $500,000 of the would-be $1 million budget at the time if the filmmakers could raise the other $500,000. And Scott Glosserman, the director, who did co-write, I just looked it up, and Nathan Basil, who played Leslie Vernon, they actually started hitting the convention circuit, doing autographs. There was a Leslie Vernon action figure. They made up really, really cool painted posters, and they tried to drum up loads of interest in this half-decade-old movie by that point. And it just didn't work. They were going to make a movie called, it was going to be part prequel, part sequel, where they were going to lampoon both, called Before the Mask, The Return of Leslie Vernon.
Interesting.
yeah, which could have been a lot of fun, but it just did not happen.
I think probably the case is that by that point, people didn't want slasher films anymore.
It was 2011, by that point,
Paranormal Activity was already a huge hit.
The physical media was already dying by that point, which is why Anchor Bay probably couldn't put up the entire budget at that point. And yeah, by that point, we were already well into found footage and
time to start a Kickstarter.
I mean, even by that point, torture porn was pretty much over by 2011, right?
Oh, sure. No. So yeah, I think the last saw was what, 2010?
Maybe. I don't know.
So
sure, I believe you.
Yeah, it's a shame though because
is that the good
I would.
One?
No, it is not.
Those came early.
Okay.
Like number one.
They were before the Saw movies started.
But it's a shame that we won't get to see a sequel to those, especially if they had designed it for a follow-up. I'd very much be interested in seeing the Behind the Mask version of Scream 2.
I just think it's really funny how they were making fun of all the hacks that couldn't get sequels made of themselves.
I'm like, and they couldn't get a sequel.
And then Leslie couldn't do it either. Even though he lived at the end of it. He couldn't get a sequel. He's a hack, just like Black Christmas and Sorority Row.
Aww.
I'm just saying.
But weirdly enough, both of those movies never received sequels.
They got remakes.
Both got remakes.
Absolutely.
So
they got
maybe
remakes.
Another 10
so
years
wait
10 from
years,
now.
And we'll see re-colon Behind the Mask.
Behind the Mask again. I don't know. Guys.
Behind your mask. Behind my mask.
Whose mask?
Your mask.
All right. Okay, gang. I think we pretty much exhausted everything we have to say here today. Any final parting thoughts on Behind the Mask, guys?
Paradise Lost. Found it.
I love his performance. I love Nathan Basil. I wonder what happened to him after that movie and why he wasn't. Honestly, I was Seth, don't roll your eyes. I can already feel your eye roll before I even say this. But at the time Behind the Mask came out, I was just becoming a Deadpool fan. And honestly, I was like, he would have made a great Deadpool.
Yeah, he probably would have.
I think
and
he would have been great.
He's installing Windows somewhere.
He's on that convention circuit still trying to raise money.
Did you know I was Leslie Vernon?
I was who?
The guy behind the mask. The Jim Carrey?
Fuck you. Throws his pen at people.
Yeah. I gotta meet him now.
Okay, gang.
I don't understand.
Do you want any antivirus software?
Thanks so much for tuning in, gang. Next week, it will be my choice. And oddly enough, I don't even know what I'm choosing for a movie next week, so it'll be a surprise, but we hope you tune in. Please make certain to subscribe to us on iTunes. Maybe leave us a rating, maybe a review. Recommend this to friends. Get back to us. Comment in some way. Yell at us on Twitter and let us know that you're listening, what you like about the show, what you hate, what we could change.
Seth would like
that
to
you're
know
out there.
Seth would like to know exactly how you feel about him on the internet.
If you would like to hear a Ghost Dad episode, start flooding
that. Yes. No,
exactly,
no,
because I've never got positive or negative reinforcement from a podcast on the internet.
If
so
enough,
I would really enjoy
I'll leave something.
If enough
not
people
Paul,
tweet Ghost Dad.
Other people.
Paul leaves good.
We are at Scream Addicts. I am at Jinx1981. Brian, you are?
I am at hashtag Ghost Dad for podcast.
You couldn't even say it.
For fuck's sake.
You were at hashtag? Yeah. It's important.
You know what?
I don't know how Twitter works.
Go to ScreamAddicts.com. It'll all be listed there. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next week.
At Weekly Stack.
What? No, we're not.